This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I am now getting recommendations on the text board about how we could make my name into a food or a dessert. Or at least they're all desserts so far, Elsie. Somebody says crispy Christy Cameron caramel donut. That sounds delicious. Claude says Christy caramel. Also sounds good.
There's also one that Colton Prail in the newsroom just mentioned.
Okay, give it to me. Lay it on me.
Conversation here. So do you remember SpongeBob? Well, probably a lot of people have heard of SpongeBob SquarePants. There's a restaurant called the Krusty Krab. So instead of that, it's the Christy Krab.
Well, that doesn't sound like a good restaurant.
No, it would probably just like, yeah, they're, you know, rebranded instantly.
You know, I don't really know if I'd get a lot of customers if the name of my restaurant was Christy Krab. I think I should just leave it there. That sounds like that place needs a health inspection. I don't know. Maybe we can come up with something better than that. It is 4:10 on Ottawa Now. The places we go, folks, it's organic. We don't mean to end up there, but here we are without a map. 4:11, it is pretty warm out there this afternoon, as Maddie Eisenberg was telling us, not Eisenberger, 31 degrees right now. The Humidex value is sitting at 39. Tomorrow, down 10 degrees, only 29, which is pretty nice. I find 29 to be a temperature that's pretty comfortable. Then the rain comes back in. You know, we've been getting a fair bit of rain lately, which my grass is enjoying. Me, not so much. I had a poor friend who was camping all weekend in the rain. But Saturday ended up being a lot better than they said. Much better than they originally said. Speaking of they, who am I speaking of when I say they? They. The meteorologists, the climatologists, and in fact, David Phillips from Environment Canada will be joining us in about 8 minutes from now. We'll talk about the weather forecast. We'll talk about those daily heat records in BC in that one community, 46.6 degrees. Unbelievable. 4:12 on Ottawa Now. 10 people have died following that horrifying building collapse in Miami. I was watching the search and rescue mission, and it is a search and rescue. This is the biggest search operation within Florida's history. They've been describing it as a city within a city. People that are working tirelessly 24/7 through the sweltering heat, the humidity. And yes, it is not a recovery operation. They are still searching. And they are optimistic that perhaps in these mountain of rubble, in this massive search, that they could find people. They haven't found any more people today. 10 people confirmed dead, 151 people still unaccounted for, as you heard in the news just now. But they're hoping that somehow, with these teams from Israel and other places that have been brought in to help, that they could rescue someone else or more people, because they say there could be air pockets where the survivors are alive. But family members are living this nightmare, and each hour, can you imagine how painful that would be to know that your family member is in that 151 and you just want the search to go faster. And they've been hearing that. They've been hearing from the family members saying, why is this taking so long? Why can't you just get in there? Why haven't you pulled anyone else out? So the officials reached a point where they did something pretty unusual. They took the family members to the site to see what they were doing. Javier Boschman is a reporter with CTV National News. She's there at the scene.
Some of the family members had been asking to see firsthand. Actually, some of the family members, of course, frustrated, dealing with so many emotions. We're talking about the fact that how is it possible that no one, you know, so few people have been pulled from that wreckage, from the rubble in so many days. When you look at the fact that there's 10 bodies that have been pulled, people are saying, well, there's so many more people missing. How is it possible that there hasn't been more progress on that? And some of the family members wanted to see the site, wanted to see the search and rescue firsthand, and they'd been asking for that. And so yesterday we saw these buses take the family members, those who wanted to. There were some people who did not want to go to the site, but those who wanted to were taken there so that they could have a few moments to see what's going on. And some of the officials were talking about the fact that it was important because there were a lot of questions coming their way about, as you say, the speed of it, but also about, well, have you checked apartment 802? Have you checked this area? And saying, you know, there was really no way to tell them that there is no apartment 802. There is no apartment this or that. And so for them to see it firsthand, I don't, we haven't heard from family members as to how valuable that moment is, but I can tell you that when they returned those buses, we saw them, you know, leaving those buses, and there was so much emotion, hugging one another. Incredibly emotional moment in this excruciatingly long wait for any news.
Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Ray Jadala says it's not time to wind down the search and rescue operation. They still have hope.
There's a misunderstanding regarding that everyone believes that the search and rescue operation should cease after a specific time, and that's far from the truth. In the end, there's numerous variables and facts. It's not based on opinions. It's not based on time. It's not based on, you know, a specific area you just happen to see on TV that went down. It's based on variables and facts.
It's pretty catastrophic for those family members to actually see. A lot of them wanted to see, as you heard Genevieve Boschman say. Some of them didn't. But to actually see the magnitude of the damage, to understand that this is what it's like to sort through the wreckage and the debris. The fire chief, Andy Alvarez, the deputy incident commander overseeing the rescue effort, says heavy equipment has been brought in to aid in the search for survivors.
We have the latest technology as far as rescue equipment. We got DelSAR systems that can hear. We got underground sonar systems that can detect victims. We brought in huge cranes to help us lift big slabs of concrete.
Listening devices, as he's describing there, sniffer dogs are now being used to search for signs of life. The thing that is throwing a lot of people off or making them feel like this should be going faster and that something's not being done properly. Paramedics have said that they've heard sounds. And then when you say that they're hearing sounds from the wreckage, people say, it's somebody down there. They're alive. Go and get them. But in fact, the officials are saying it's not the sound of a human being calling for help. It's shifting debris, or it has been so far. 55 apartments collapsed. Resident Barry Cohen was in the building when all of this happened.
I was in a deep sleep, and I heard what I thought was a crash of lightning, but the crashing noise didn't stop, and it just kept going and going and going for, I'd say, 20, 30 seconds. My wife and I went out of our room to see what was going on, and we looked out on our balcony, and there was dust just pluming out. And then we went back inside and we tried to escape, get out of the building. We went down a stairwell, and when we got to the bottom of the stairwell, we couldn't open the door of the fire escape. So we went down another floor lower to the garage, and we got in there, and dust everywhere, smoke everywhere, and water pouring down from the pipes which had broken in the garage.
Wow. I had goosebumps listening to that account. Just feeling so sick for him watching this happen. They did get out. They lived. They went back into the apartment. They grabbed what they could. He said, what do you do in that situation, in a life and death situation? What do you bring with you? They were saved by the Miami-Dade firefighters. The question is, what happened here? Joseph Chabon is a structural engineer in Florida. He says it's not an easy task.
Building on the ocean side face extreme aggressive environment, and as much as wind loads, hurricane forces, salt, water from the ocean, aggressive chlorides that's inherent in the air, which will attack continuously the building structure, concrete, rebar, which are the main supporting elements of any building, whether it's on the beach or on inland. But on the ocean side, there's aggressive environment, specifically the wind loads, salt and washouts and soil erosion due to the high tide, low tide of the ocean and the water table below and the sand that's inherently more than likely is below the foundation of, the, of those buildings.
So if you look back, there was an engineer's report from 2018 that said there was a major error in the original design of the building, that there was a fault preventing water draining away from the base of the building. It also went on to say that there was major structural damage to the concrete platform beneath the swimming deck and an abundant, I'm quoting here, an abundant cracking of columns, beams, and walls in the garage. And it went on to say that the repairs had to be carried out in a timely fashion. Is that what happened here? No. You can't draw a conclusion about what happened, as we just heard the engineer say. But just some background information and definitely some information that is going to be considered as they try and figure out why a building like this collapsed, as they weigh those different factors. But it's unbelievable. The footage is just terrifying. The way the building pancaked, there were spaces that were 10 feet or more reduced to just feet. Right now, though, they're not thinking about why. They're thinking about the people that could be trapped inside, the 151 people that are still unaccounted for. I'm singing that
I'm thinking that an 98 Chevrolet. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
423, I'm getting all of these hilarious text messages about how we can make my name into a food. Rice Christy. Says Sherry in Osgood, and I think I like that one the best so far. So thanks, Sherry, for that. Oh, Patricia Bull, she makes me laugh. Maddie Eisenberger, I think that that's happened more than once. I'll have to ask Maddie later on in the show. But I think sometimes you say Eisenberg, and it happens. It happens. It made me laugh, though. Pretty hot and steamy out there today. 31, feeling like 39. Tomorrow, a more moderate 29 degrees, and then we're back into the more rainy weather. The grass really needed a good drink of water. Mine was looking ridiculous because we had a bald patch on the front lawn, and so rather than overseeding all of it, I just did the one patch, and it looked pretty good, and then it was so hot and dry, and we had no rain, and the rest of it all dried up, and then the new grass was looking bright neon green. So it looked like my front lawn had this strange streak, like a green highlight across the top. David Phillips, senior climatologist with Environment Canada, is joining us now. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm well, Christy.
Good to get you on the show. So, sure. You know, we've got heat records in British Columbia and out west, and I want to get to that in a second.
Sure.
But what's been interesting is that we've been getting a little bit more rain finally in Ontario.
You're right. I mean, it really is the answers to everybody's prayers. Farmers were quite concerned. They were really happy on Saturday when we saw heavy rains. Maybe too much down in southwestern Ontario, where they had, you know, over 100 millimeters in places. But Ottawa was nicely well watered. You had 26 millimeters on Saturday, 5 on Friday, 0.2 yesterday. You end up right now, as if we come to the end of June, you're right on normal, about 92 millimeters of rain, and that's typically what you get. So we still have, you know, 3 days today and two more days. So I think it's certainly going to come out a little bit more than normal. And that is really so beneficial because May was just a thimbleful of rain. I mean, and then, of course, during those 2 months, temperatures were, particularly in June, have been about a degree and a half to or more warmer than normal, 4 days where the temperature got up above 30. So there was certainly the demand for that precipitation by the atmosphere sucking up the moisture. But boy, it really came at a right time. And it was nicely spaced, 11 millimeters the beginning of the month and 11 in the middle and then 26 and then 26. So it was just almost as if this was what everybody ordered and nature came through.
I love this thing in the West region or in the western part of Canada, in Alberta and in British Columbia. It's not just hot, David Phillips, but they're calling it a heat dome.
Yes, it is. It's a feature that, you know, we talk about. It's not new. It's not like, it's almost like the polar vortex, you know, how dominated that in the wintertime, and now it's the heat dome.
What I know. This? I love it. I love it. It's like, welcome to the heat dome.
Right.
David Phillips versus Christy Cameron in the ring.
You know, know, and it's an, I think it's a very apt name for it, because it is a dome. It's like putting a cap or a lid on a big piece of geography out there, like the Sky Dome or BC Dome, and just sits over it. And what happens, Christy, is that, and that dome goes way up into the atmosphere, about where jet aircraft fly. And so that air is sinking, and it's weighted down on you. It's a high pressure. It's pressure down on the surface. And as it pushes and squeezes those air molecules, it kind of makes them jiggle and jaggle and create heat, and boy, those warm up the temperatures. But it's worse than that, because often what you can happen when you get, you've got some moisture, some soil moisture, well, some of that heat energy from the sun will go to evaporate the water. But when you've got the Okanagan had the driest spring on record, southern Alberta, similarly very dry conditions, then there just means there's that much more heat to warm the air. It bakes the ground and warms the air, and that's why we're seeing these temperatures rocket up. I mean, just before we came on the air, I looked at Lytton, and that was the record yesterday, 46.6. It was at 1 o'clock, it was 41.9. Yesterday, when it broke the record, it was 39.7 at 1 o'clock. So, you know, that record could stand one day. I mean, we're calling for a high of 47 today and tomorrow, so it may be the one stood for 84 years. This one might stand for one day, because there's clearly more heat to arrive in that part of it's dry there anyways, but my gosh, this is really desert-like.
I mean, to withstand that type of heat, could you really be outside? I guess if you have a really high heat tolerance, but you're not glistening in that. You are baking at that point.
It is unhealthy. And the other thing, Christy, you've got to always remember, these air temperatures are in the shade. I mean, you go out, if you're a
holy Hannah. So what's it like in the sun?
Well, add another 5, 6, 7 degrees. I mean, you take 46, add 7 degrees, what do you get? 53? Well, the world's record is Death Valley, California at 56. So, you know, it's really, and of course, Christy, they don't have air conditioning out there. They don't.
I know. My sister lives in Calgary. She had to go out to the store, and I'm sure she was elbowing everyone else in the masses to get an air conditioner, because, you know, it's pretty cool in Calgary, right? It's pretty cool, especially at night.
They can go a whole year without a temperature above 30. I mean, you guys get about 13, 15 of those. They might likely get one. In fact, I looked at Edmonton, for example, and there looks like they're going to have 6 or 7 days above 30. Well, the last 5 years, they only had her 6 or 7 days above 30. So it shows you how lingering this is, and really how, and buildings aren't built to shed the heat. They're built to retain the heat. And so that's what it makes it even more injurious. And people are coping out there, but it's very tough, for sure.
As they say down south, so hot, I just saw a hound dog chasing a rabbit, and they were both walking. Or what do they say, hotter than a pepper sprout? What does David Phillips say when it's that hot?
People often refer it to hell, hotter than hell. That's hell, Michigan. And usually every place is warmer than hell, Michigan. So it is, but clearly these are record-breaking temperatures by far. I mean, not just by a tenth of a degree, but it literally shattered the previous record.
Yeah, sweating like a hog. I don't know. I'm out. The texters can let me know. Just roasting, baking. Right. David Phillips, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Christy. Bye-bye.
David Phillips, Environment Canada. What do you say when it's hot? Could fry an egg on my forehead. Is that it? Is that what you say? It's pretty hot in Ottawa today, but, you know, we can't really complain. I like the heat, personally. But it can be uncomfortable. Gosh, I feel bad for the people that are working outside. It is 31 right now in Ottawa. The Humidex value is 39. We do have a heat warning. It's nothing like Lytton, BC, but still, stay hydrated if you're out there this afternoon. You're listening to News Talk 580 CFRA. We'll be right back.
I'm just right here dancing around to the rhythm. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
4:38. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. Thanks for spending some time with us on this show. It's always nice to connect with you, and you can text anytime. I just know. I can feel it, the rumbling of the political heat, that you're going to want to weigh in on these topics. So get those fingers ready for texting. Do some little stretches, right? Flex your fingers. Get the dexterity, because you can text in anytime. 580-580. The heat is clearly getting to me on the show. It is 4:39. Premier Doug Ford today said, we need to teach children what went on in residential schools. He said he's going to work with the education minister to make that happen. In 2019, Ontario did make it part of the curriculum, mandatory for residential school history to be taught beginning in grade 4. That is the earliest of any jurisdiction in Canada. British Columbia does it in grade 5. Saskatchewan does it in grade 6. So, you know, at first blush here, you might think we're ahead of this. We're actually teaching it, and we're teaching it earlier than other places. But in 2015, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission said we should do this earlier. One of the recommendations they had was calling for residential school history to be taught in kindergarten. What do you think? Are we falling short here? Should we be teaching this history earlier? How about in kindergarten? Text us and let us know. 580-580. It's time for our political heat panel.
Now, political heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
We have Cam Holstrom, consultant at Blue Sky Strategy Group, joining us once again. Kate Harrison, vice chair of Summa Strategies. And Lindsay Maskell, political consultant and former advisor to Premier McGuinty. Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Hi, Chris.
Hello there.
Cam, I'll start with you on this one. Is this something we should be teaching in Ontario in kindergarten?
Yes. Yes, we absolutely should. Because as someone who used to teach history, and used to be very familiar with the history curriculum, history is about context. And how do you talk about the context of the history of this country without having that up front and center? To me, that's a must. And also, too, I think it's good for people to be more and more aware of this. You know what? The fact is, I appreciate the fact the Premier had came out and said this today. But, you know, I'm very much in a mood of actions versus words. And this Premier, when he had the chance 3 years ago, he canceled the redevelopment of a Indigenous curriculum in the province. Just did it out of hand. Wang, as soon as he came into power. Like, that was the message that he sent to our community. And you know what? Like, I'm back home now, and I'm getting the chance to spend some time with my family. And after all of this, it's been good for me to be able to reconnect, because, you know what, it's like, this is not just some abstract thing for so many of us. My dad went to a day school. You know, I was talking with one of my great aunts who's a residential school survivor when I arrived on Saturday. When you're seeing these effects in people in your day-to-day lives, and you're not seeing that reflected in the curriculum that you're taught, you have to question, where is my place in this society? And we want our schools to be welcoming places where kids see themselves reflected. So what are we saying to my daughter, to Indigenous children across this country, if you're talking about the center? My daughter's going into fourth grade this coming year. She'll get to talk about this finally. Mm. But why is it that it wasn't before now? Why is it that I'm telling my daughter these things, but her classmates aren't hearing it and getting the full context of their classmates' life? So, yeah, you know what? I'd like to see this done better. And I'm hoping that this moment will push some more action on these kinds of things.
Kate.
Yeah, I think as long as curriculum is age appropriate, that's really the key, right? It's been a long time since I was in kindergarten, Christy, I'm sad to say. But I think as long as, you know, we're still focusing at that age on very fundamental things, right? Reading and writing, learning the alphabet. Like, I think that that's key. I also do remember at a very young age, though, learning about our history. And, you know, I think that that has to continue. And there's good parts of history and bad parts of it. So, you know, I take Cam's point that it needs to be a part of the curriculum for all ages. It just needs to evolve based on kind of where you're at in your learning.
Lindsay, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I can't imagine how, and not to speak for Cam, but how Indigenous people must feel when the fact that they keep hearing the word shocked, right? Because this is something, you know, we some of us have known, but most of us, more of us, should have known a lot sooner. So I do think there's a way, and especially when you think about parents, and I don't have children, but I have many friends who have had to have this conversation with their children who are younger than people in grade four, because they're hearing about it. And we've never had more access to information and younger people having access to information they need to know things sooner. So there, as Kate said, I agree, we need to think about how we do it in an age-appropriate way. But parents are already having to explain this to their children. So having some support from the school system and a curriculum would actually be helpful, because, you know, the traumas that people have suffered, this shouldn't be shocking news to people about our history now.
Let's talk about Canada Day. We've got to. Okay, this is our political heat panel. July the 1st is this Thursday. For years, this is not the first time. I don't want to come onto the show and pretend like, oh, all of a sudden now this is a conversation. It's not. But I would say personally, Cam, I've noticed that there's been a definite shift. There are much louder calls this year. There are more people joining and saying that we can't do this. We shouldn't be celebrating this year. I was actually personally really surprised to see a family member who generally doesn't get too political on Facebook posting about this and saying, this is horrifying. We cannot do this after the discovery of these residential school unmarked graves. And I personally am seeing more and more people that are in on this conversation saying, I'm not celebrating and you shouldn't either. Cam, is it appropriate to celebrate Canada Day this year?
I'm not going to tell other people how they should feel and how they should want to go about this. But I know my own heart, and my heart's not in it this year. And it's not out of a hate for this country or being unproud of this place, as Aaron O'Toole has suggested that somehow he alone is the only person in this country, or the only political leader in this country, who is proud of Canada and wants to see it get better. I want to see Canada get better, too, and I want to celebrate the good things about this country because they are there. But we're grieving. We're mourning. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. There are periods in the history of this country where we've gone through events or we've seen things happen when celebration isn't exactly the thing we want to do at the moment because it doesn't feel right. And I would put this in that category. You know, Kenora here, where I am, they just canceled their fireworks just announced an hour ago. It was a site to three residential schools, including the Celia Jeffrey Residential School where Chani Wenjack, the famous Chani Wenjack, ran from. We don't, like, yes, we love our country. We want our country to be better. But now is not the time to celebrate. It's just not. It doesn't feel right. But I'm not going to sit here and tell other people what to do. Right. You have to do what you want to do, what makes you feel best. But don't be mad at the rest of us who are not in a mindset to do it and calling us less patriotic or telling us that we want the country to fail because we're unwilling to ignore the moment that we're in and what we're feeling. Because you know what? That, to me, would be the most un-Canadian thing of all, would be to be so jingoistic and throwing that out there and asking us to put our pain aside so someone else can have a nice barbecue.
Kate, the city of Melville, Saskatchewan, and as Cam pointed out, some places have just been outright canceling it, no fireworks, nothing's happening. But I thought Melville was interesting because in that Saskatchewan city, they've postponed it. So they said they're going to consult with leaders of local First Nations and try and plan a cross-cultural celebration this summer. Your thoughts on Canada Day, and is that potentially a path forward?
Yeah, my view is that it's not really up to governments to cancel Canada Day. That Canada Day actually belongs to Canadians. So I think Cam is right when he says people can celebrate or not celebrate as they wish. My personal view is that Canada Day is aspirational, and that means being proud of the things that we've done well and thinking about the things we need to do better. And I think that certainly the treatment of Indigenous peoples in Canada would fall into that second category. But ultimately, it's really not up to governments to be making this call about how people choose to or to not celebrate.
I think that's interesting, Lindsay, just picking up on something that Kate said. It doesn't have to be rah, rah, everything we have done is amazing, that it can be a reflection and it can be a promise to do better. Like, it doesn't have to be all celebration. It can also be, we failed and here's where we need to improve and here is where we are failing and here is what is wrong. So I'm wondering what your personal thoughts are this Canada Day, this July 1st.
Yeah, you can take this this as a, you know, for those that, especially at this point in a pandemic, those that want to celebrate and those that want to gather with people, it can also be a time to talk about, you know, what we can do better and what we can achieve when we work together, because Canadians have done this before. So there's other ways to look at this. For those that do want to find something to feel positive about. And, you know, that's the problem with history, right? So, you know, when I think about the statue of the Famous Five, like, you know, we can celebrate women getting the vote, but those women also didn't want certain populations to vote, so much so that it was actually more important to them than women voting. So there's a lot of complicated history, and we can use Canada Day both as a space to, for those that, you know, want to take that break. Like, my favorite restaurant is working that day and doing donations for a crisis helpline, for example. But they also want people to be able to get together and have a space for them to do that. So it can mean anything to Canadians. It belongs to everybody. And yes, for some people, it's not a time to celebrate. And for some, it will be, you know, let's talk about what we can do better and be proud to be Canadian in what we can look forward to and how we can do better going forward.
I love that you brought up Nellie McClung, because I grew up and I was always, you know, an admiration of her, because she was a suffragette in the early 1900s. And then later on, you go and learn about her racism, some other parts of her history. And it's all part of history, right? It's all one thing. There are many things going on there. But I want to ask you back, Cam, because you said this year it's individual. It doesn't feel right to celebrate for me, but it's up to people. Is it different this year, in your opinion, because of what has been happening? Or like, do you feel the same way about Canada Day this year as you did last year and in 2017 when there were loud calls to cancel Canada Day?
To be honest, no, this year does feel different to me. I know for others, I've got friends of mine who this is how they've always felt about it. And that, again, I've respected that. And I've always tried to walk that line. But for me, it's like this year, it's just too much pain and sorrow. It's just like, honestly, when the news came Thursday about what happened, and I know you and I spoke on the radio that afternoon, I couldn't get out of Dodge fast enough. I was out the door on Friday morning, first thing to get home, because I've just been between the pandemic and everything else, and then this. It's been so much emotional stress and pain. Like, I needed to get home. I needed to connect to my land. I needed to be with my family. And you know what? If that involves or doesn't involve fireworks, you know, it's completely immaterial to me at this point. And to me, the idea of going out and throwing the full bash like we used to, like when I grew up, I used to love the fireworks at Canada Day. They were amazing. We'd sit out in the water and watch them go off overhead, and it was a great show, and we loved it. I can't have that same feeling about this year because, again, we're all coming to grips with a lot. And I think it's okay for us to say, look, guys, tone it down a bit. It's okay. We're not saying, you know, tear the place down. We're just saying, look, we're going through a lot right now, and this is not the moment. And you know what?
Yeah.
What I worry about with this is that some people are trying to draw this into some greater culture war, cancel culture BS argument. And that only makes it harder for us to deal with the hard history, which frankly we've been ignoring for decades anyway, which is why it's so much harder on us right now. You know what? If we had dealt with some of this history long ago, if we actually faced up to it, we wouldn't be having to have these heartbreaking conversations right now. So I'd rather be a part. If I want to do my part with this country to make it greater, I want to do my part to get us through this now, help us face this now, so my daughter and her children and my great-grandchildren, somebody, never have to face this the way we have, that we have done the mature adult thing and actually allow this country to move on, grow, and, you know, come to grips with who we are and become better.
It is 4:52. I quickly want to get to a final topic here. A big announcement from Canada's infrastructure minister and the MP for Ottawa Centre, Catherine McKenna, making the announcement along the Rideau Canal this morning that she's not running again. She wants to spend more time with her children. She wants to continue to fight climate change. And she said it has nothing to do with the harassment, the fact that she needed a security detail, with any of the online vitriol or negativity. This is a decision that she's made. That's just noise. Kate, what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think that it is indicative that another female cabinet minister is opting to step down or step back from politics because they feel that that's not the way that they can best get things done in Canada. I think that the fact that she held such an important portfolio and was a high-profile minister and still thinks that she can do more on the climate file from actually outside of government, to me is actually a bit of an indictment on the Trudeau government's record on climate change. And whether or not she feels optimistic about the government's desire, ability to move that file forward. So to me, that was very interesting. I think that, you know, we've had now a series of cabinet ministers who have either been forced out or choose to step back on their own. So considering, you know, this government very much came in on a brand of supporting women in politics, it's not a good day for that particular narrative.
Lindsay, how did you read it?
Yeah, no, she answered that question directly about can you work on the climate change file from within government? And she said, yes, absolutely. I understand that, you know, if your children are only home for 18 years and you've spent 8 years of them working in government, that she wants some time with her family and obviously to continue to find new ways to be, additional ways to be effective in her strategy. And I just, you know, thinking about her accomplishments, I just think about, remember that picture on the front of Maclean's of the resistance and those five premiers? And, you know, she's the, she took all that down and on her fight on the, on climate change and carbon tax while doing it, with the most trolled politician basically in Canadian history. So I think there is a lot to celebrate, and I think that there's going to be a lot of women who will enter into politics because of the path she paved to make it an easier decision to make to put your name on a ballot.
And she got emotional today. She was making that comment, Cam, speaking directly to young girls and talking about the future of politics. Final words to you on this, Kim.
Well, I would say, I thank her for her service, first of all, because I agree with what Keith and Lindsay have said. She is someone who got it worse, just about as worse as anyone beside the Prime Minister in this government. And I know she said it didn't have an effect on her, and I take her at her word, but I know for a lot of other people, it would have had that effect, and you'd understand that if she stepped away. And the other thing is, too, is that one thing I would chalk this up to is that when you've worked in politics, I mean, my colleagues can agree with me on this, is that, you know, after a while, you know, your priorities start to change a bit, and you realize the toll it can have on your personal life and the effect. And I think especially after this year of COVID, you know, when we've all gone through so much, and it helps, you know, I think it's helped people reevaluate certain things, you know, and, you know, that idea of, you know, do I want to run again? Do I want to lose the next at least 4 years, maybe more of time with my child? Well, I've got it, right? When you can always come back to it later, you know, you can always come back to it later on if that's what you really want to do, or you can have an effect another way. And I think I respect that, because there's not that many people who actually get a chance to go out on their own terms and go in a way that not only they're at peace with, but in a way where they can help avoid some greater fallout for their family. So I have full respect for her decision. I wish her nothing but the best. And yeah, and I have full respect for everyone who does that, because, you know, there's some people who just push it too far, never know when to say when, and come out of it with a much greater personal toll, and they later regret it. So I'm glad to see that she's making the choice now than maybe staying longer and regretting something later in the end.
Cam Holstrom, Kate Harrison, and Lindsay Maskell, fantastic to get you on the panel today. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Take care.
Stay cool. Stay cool out there. Cameron Holstrom, consultant at Blue Sky Strategy Group, Kate Harrison, the vice chair of Summa Strategies, and Lindsay Maskell, political consultant and former advisor to Premier McGuinty.